I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Hello and welcome. I'm Father Chad Arnold, and you're listening to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. With me, as always, in the Servant of God, Emil Capon Studio,
This is getting ridiculous.
You don't like Father Emil Capon? Is that your issue here?
I have to respond to that.
The disgruntled person in the podcast is Father Drew Hoffman.
Hello.
And the collaborator who appreciates saints and works with names is Father Garrett Burns.
Thank you so much for your work, Chad.
You know.
Get out of here.
One member of this team is helpful and one is not. I hope people in the listening world realize that. Well, last week, we kind of started off talking about our first memories of saints. And you, Drew, suggested actually we should talk about our Knights of the Holy Queen saint names. And I thought that was a great idea. Why we chose them. You never really have to convince me to talk about the saints. I'm always game for that. But I think before we do that, we probably should give a little bit of background on Knights of the Holy Queen in case someone doesn't know what that is. Because I'll sometimes make reference, oh yeah, the Knights, and people should assume I'm talking about Knights of Columbus. Another great group. Hasn't been the most impactful in my life, but great goof. Nothing against Knights of Columbus. So I don't know if one of you wanted to just give a little background on Knights of the Holy Queen, what it is, what it does.
Yeah, so Knights of the Holy Queen, I think the idea started maybe actually at Steubenville, which is in the Franciscan University in Ohio, with the idea of it being like a small group of men who are given to the Blessed Mother in a particular way and also share Catholic fraternity and brotherhood and prayer and things like that. I'm not exactly sure how it all works out
there. I don't think anybody really does.
No one knows. It's a little bit. It's like Texas A&M University, the whole university. Just like, I don't know, man.
Somehow it works.
Some good fruits, but I don't understand.
I don't know. But here in Wichita, two men, Tony Brandt and Chris Stewart, tried to implement it mainly at Bishop Carroll, but just in Wichita in general. The idea being high school, college age, and older guys would join together on Thursday evenings at St. Francis, usually, for 5:30 Mass. Afterward, pray the Hail Holy Queen together in a moment of prayer, and then usually go grab something to eat, and then play Frisbee. That was the idea. Like, don't overcomplicate it. Pray and hang together. And then there'll be some retreats throughout the year and things like that. And it was really formative for us. And we'll probably get into how formative it was for
us.
But part of that is that you take a saint name, like a saint to be your protector, your guide, your friend, similar to how one does with confirmation. And when you consecrate yourself to Mary, so there's a 33-day process helmed by Louis de Montfort, and we'll probably talk more about all this in podcasts to come. Then with that, you're given a saint name that you choose that's unique amongst all of the saints.
Supposed to be unique.
That's the idea. And sounds like you have a negative experience.
Some of us have a little bitterness over that.
I don't actually know the story, so I'm excited to hear what this story is. So it was mainly a male brotherhood group prayer hangout. Was really formative for the three of us.
Yeah, and just has that faith component. From what I remember, the motivation was just find a way to get high school guys to go to Mass an extra time a week. And that seems pretty simple, like you said, and not a huge goal. We're going to go out there and change the world. But of course, it does. And just that dedication to the Eucharist and especially to the Blessed Mother with other men, young men, was huge. And they were teachers at our high school. So we had a good relationship with them through that and just grew together and bore great fruit in our lives and a lot of guys.
Yeah, and it's waxed and waned over the years. So it's still going on.
Still going on. We, as we record this, just last week had the Knights Christmas party at my place.
Which was awesome.
People there. There was a ton of high school, college-aged, young adults. 5 priests, I think, were there throughout the night. And so great energy still. But again, it goes up and down. Right. Just depends on where the Spirit's moving.
And I remember sometimes when in its height, we'd go to the Mass at St. Francis, an evening Mass, local parish, and there'd just be... We sat in the back row and there'd be like 40 guys. So you just fill like 5 pews. And so all these little old ladies and other people of the parish come around and there's just this mass of young guys just attending Mass. Yeah, it was a great witness in that regard.
Yeah, too. Really, really energizing.
But as you were saying, part of the consecration process, we would, as we concluded our consecration, is every guy took a saint as their particular patron in the Knights of the Holy Queen, and they would take that name. So I figured we'd open up with what saints did you guys choose and why?
Yeah, so I can lead it off. I chose Mark the Evangelist. So I think, if I remember right, a couple of my first picks were maybe already taken. Mm-hmm. I would guess, I don't know where we were at, Drew, maybe.
We were about close to 7 years in.
Yeah.
And they were between 10 and 20 guys per year. So there was probably 100 plus knights when we were consecrated. Back in 2006, 2007, something like
2007.
That.
2007. Yeah. Yeah, so some of the saints we talked about before were probably at the top of my list and then kept going down. But I chose Mark for a couple reasons, and I think is as usual for a high school boy, some that were good reasons and some not so good reasons.
Right.
We had a buddy that was, his name was Mark Powell, and he hated
Mark.
Knights of the Holy Queen because he had not been invited. Yeah, and so there's always this tension, I think, in any ministry, in any group, like you need exclusivity for it to have value and worth and vulnerability in a friendship. But to have exclusivity means, somebody gets excluded. And so partly I just want to be Mark just to like twist that knife a little bit. That was not a big reason.
Noble choice. Yes.
But I think a bigger was just going through initial scripture classes and not knowing much or having much practice of reading the scriptures and having that desire. And Mark's gospel was the shortest. So I was kind of set my sights low, set expectations low. So that was pretty much it at the time, but he's been a great intercessor for me since then, as so often is our experience of the saints.
Yeah.
They choose us as much as we choose them, and we might choose them for a not great reason, and then they purify and perfect that. So
I chose St. Ignatius of Antioch, which coincidentally enough is the same first name as my confirmation saint, St. Ignatius of Loyola.
That's confusing.
It is confusing. There's enough names out there. You'd think the saints would mix it up a little bit.
Do you call one of them Iggy?
Just yeah, I call one of them Iggy and one of them Nate.
Okay, nice. Perfect.
And nice. So I had chosen Ignatius of Loyola as my confirmation saint maybe 6 months before this or something like that. And really, as happens a lot in my life, it got down to the end and I hadn't really thought about it. And so I go to the list that was posted of who had chosen what name so that you didn't repeat, although I think we're going to hear that maybe that has happened. And Ignatius of Loyola had been taken. I'm like, ooh. And I knew there was an Ignatius of Antioch, so I just chose that. And I remember telling my mom that and saying, I chose Ignatius of Antioch, not because of Ignatius of Loyola. And whenever you say that, it's the surest sign that that's right. Exactly
that the only reason, yeah.
What had happened. And so Ignatius of Antioch has been a great gift to me, as often happens. You don't expect
he's a stud in his own right.
He's an incredible early father in the apostolic father, 100 AD, torn apart by lions. His letters are very famous. I had a quote from him on my prayer card for my first Mass and ordination. So it always works out. It always works out, but he's been a great friend to me.
Cool.
Now I think we're going to hear some tension, and so I'm excited to...
You know, there's some emotional wounds I'm still working through, you know, 20 years later. So I was in one of the earlier groups, 2001, 2002 is when I made my consecration, and they made a big deal. They made a big deal like, oh, you can't repeat a name. You got to have, because I wanted to do St. John Bosco, who I was real big on that time, but one other guy already had that. And there were only like, you know, I don't know, 10, 15 guys before me, but it was Tony and Chris were just real big on, oh, we can't repeat, can't do that. It's got to be unique and individual. But they forgot to keep track of it, I guess, after my time. And so there is another knight about five, I think it's Josh Manns, who shares the same knight's name that I do. So I think it's only happened twice, and mine is one of them.
Jeez.
And so anytime we're in the there's been a few times where we've been at a Knights of the Holy Queen function at the same time. And I insist he use a different name because.
So who was yours?
So I chose St. John of the Cross.
Okay. Oh. John and John.
Yeah. Right. So he can be. There's plenty of other Johns. He can switch over to a different John.
Jeez.
I chose St. John of the Cross. I wanted to be a mystic, so hasn't happened yet, you know, but I thought that'd be a good way to go. Tried that path. The Lord has not responded in yet there. I wanted to be able to love the cross like John of the Cross did. Also has not quite happened yet. We're still working on that one. And I knew he had like these great, you know, writings. The people talk about, you know, his everything he wrote, Ascend of Mount Carmel and Dark Night of the Soul, and you know, at 17, 8 years old, that sounded really awesome. I still don't understand those books. Like, I try, and I've read them, and I'm like, yep, no, not there yet. We had a spiritual director at the Mount who said, anytime you think you're ready for John on the Cross, you're not. Just put the book back down. put it back on the shelf. But one of the things I have discovered about him that surprised me, so he wrote a lot of poetry. He also was, he liked to draw, which mm-hmm. to me is a cool thing. Yeah. We've got some pictures that he drew of like the crucifixion by hand. That was like his hobby, as he would, he would draw. So about a few years back, I celebrated my 10th anniversary as a priest. And so I wanted to do something for celebration of that. A part of my vocation experience was consecrating myself to Mary. So I always had that relationship. The very first parish I ever served at was Our Lady of Lourdes. And so I made kind of a promise to Our Lady that before I got too far in my priesthood, I'd make a pilgrimage to Lourdes, France. So for my 10th anniversary, I go over to Lourdes, France. And since I had consecrated myself to her under the patronage of St. John of the Cross, who also has a pretty significant Marian devotion, I thought, well, we're going to try again. And I took along his collected works to read on this retreat that I did at Lourdes. And yeah, sent to Mount still didn't get anything. But what I did find is in his collected works, it has a lot of his poems. And I'm not really a poetry guy. I feel like I like literature. I should like poetry. I don't. But John of the Cross's stuff was good. Like, it moved me surprisingly. So I thought it was going to be the part of the book, okay, I'm going to glance over this and we're going to get into the deep stuff in prayer. I spent most of my prayer just kind of cycling and working through his poems. There was one poem, and I'm still kind of haunted by the chorus verse that he kind of uses in it. He has the line, I am dying because I do not die. And it just, I can't tell you how many times I walked around the shrines of Lourdes just kind of repeating that and praying that I'm dying because I do not die, in the sense that, well, I'm frustrated with myself because I'm not getting holier, or, you know, I desire you so much, Lord. And it's almost like a separated love, and it feels like it's killing me that I'm not closer to you. I don't know, but I love that phrase, I am dying because I do not die, an occasion that still kind of rears its head in my prayer. So yeah, John of the Cross, he wasn't what I thought he was going to be for me when I picked him at 18, but he's been an influential person, certainly more influential to me than he has ever been to Josh Manns, who's just an imitator. I mean, you know, it's really kind of embarrassing for him.
So disrespectful.
Man.
Well, thank you for your service. Yeah,
I
know that hasn't been easy.
It's an emotional time.
You've handled it like John the Cross would. Yeah. You've embraced the cross. You've learned from him.
It's sometimes hard to tell us apart.
I've heard Josh Mann is actually in the Dark Night of the Soul. Yeah, right now. Right. And so.
He is a mystic, actually.
Son of a... Oh, come on!
That could have been me! So close!
Well, it's really fitting that we start off talking about the Knights of the Holy Queen, that we talk about these friendship with the saints that kind of surprised us and have developed over the years, because the topic I want to kind of focus on today's podcast is the idea of friendship and how that plays into discernment, into who we are as people, because it is hugely important. You know, having good friends around us, I guess in the simple, we get more into it, but having good friends around us enables us to discern better. You know, that was a big part of the Knights of the Holy Queen. Not that they were telling me, hey, you should do this or that, but they understood what I was doing. You know, they weren't knocking it. They weren't questioning it. They were very supportive, and they didn't treat me any different. Like, I went off to seminary, I came back, and I'm still the same guy that I hung out with before. And so just this idea of the importance of good friendship and how that can help us in our discernment. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts or things you want to weigh in on that.
I think, like, our vocation stories can't be told without friendship. They're integral to our vocation stories because of the men who were part of my life because of the Knights of the Holy Queen. Numerous of those men became priests. Of my age group, year above, year below, within a year or two, there's 8 or 9 of those guys ended up becoming priests over the last few years. So I know a big, Gary and I talk on the podcast a lot, but Father Clay Kimbrough was one of our friends in high school as well. We all graduated together. So did Father Kyle Dugan, but we didn't really like him in high school. he came along years later, but Mr. Carroll, class 09. And Clay joined a year earlier than us. And having that friendship with someone who is in seminary mm-hmm. was really important for me because I had a friend who was a seminarian who was going after what the Lord asked him to, who had left K-State after a year. That was really formative for me to see somebody do it, to have someone I was close with go through those steps. I needed that And it was a grace to have a friend doing that.
Yeah, for me, it's just so much of those foundational building blocks. One thing I remember a lot from my early years in seminary was the trifold mission, if you want to say, first self-knowledge or awareness, then self-possession, then self-gift. You kind of have to go through that to be able to get to that point of self-gift in your vocation of the priesthood, if that's God's will. And so much of my self-knowledge and maybe bits of self-possession came through friendship. Just Knights of the Holy Queen and in seminary, like, yeah, Knights was just guys being dudes. Like, we just got hung out and we went to cheap Taliano's pizza and it was terrible. And we ate
I kind of forgot that's what we always did.
It was not a high class ordeal any point in time.
Never. Every once in a while, we'd go out somewhere actually nice and we do round down. You guys remember round down? So you'd round down to the nearest $5 limit depending on what you bought. So we would all buy $9.99 things and only give $5. And eventually they had to explain to us, well, you have to include your soda and tax and a tip and things like that because they were running out of money. The Knights would pay for the rest of it. But yeah, usually not very classy.
But yeah, very non-classy things, but just a space to figure out who I was. And especially more and more in a world today where that's getting pretty confused of what it means to be a man, what it means to be a man of faith. Just so necessary to have, like that saying goes, you become like the five people you spend the most time with or whatever. And that could not be truer in my life. And that's a great gift that I look around and some of the best men I know came from Knights of the Holy Queen in my time in seminary. And so bit by bit, I became a little bit more like them, became who I was, possessed myself, and then could give myself at the time of ordination.
And I have talked about this. I struggled a lot in seminary over the years. And I would not have made it without Garrett and without some of these guys who stuck by me when I was not the best version of myself. Mm-hmm. And that was so vital that there were people keeping an eye on me, loving me when I wasn't really able to respond with that type of love and self-gift and things like that. Without that, I would have left easy. And so that's a vital thing. And when guys leave, often there is a friendship aspect that's missing, that there was... whether it be caring for them or telling them the truth. This happens in college ministry and it'll happen with people in mission fields, like folks, missionaries, stuff like that. A lot of times when you encounter sometimes a man who does some things you don't understand, Father Gale and I would talk about this a lot. I don't think he had male friends, strong male friends. You can almost tell that because he'll do some things like, if I did that, Garrett would have chewed me. I had heard about it from the boys.
And never lived it down.
I never would have lived it down. Like, who do you think you are? And I still do plenty of those types of things. But you would have heard about it. As silly as that is, that kind of giving grief, giving guff, that's how people get sanded down in the best sense of the word. Those are kind of some things that come to mind early on.
Yeah. Oh, I forget what you were trying to say in the beginning, but you almost said the Knights of the Holy Queen wasn't heavy on compliments. You were trying to say something, but
exactly. They certainly were not. I probably said content or something like that. But yeah, there wasn't a lot of compliments in the Knights of the Holy Queen.
But it was done in a charitable way. But like you were saying, it was how you, there are still things some of these guys bring up. Like, remember when you were 17, you were such an idiot and we ride each other, but it's done in a brotherly way that's beneficial to who we have become.
You don't make fun of people in that side of way that you don't deeply love, that you don't, and you got to be careful. You do have to be careful with some of those things and learn some
cross
of that.
The line a few times.
Absolutely. But it's always been such a sign of affection when someone teases me, I've always thought, and vice versa. It means I know something about you. It means I care about you. Maybe I am trying to tell you something and you could say it's a passive aggressive way, but it's the way humans work. Like, dude, don't do that again. And sometimes I'll have to have, this will happen with some of the college boys, especially that I really love. I'll say something jokingly to them, meaning don't do it again. And then I'll have to come back to them like, hey, that was not actually appropriate. Just don't do that thing again. Because you've got to find that line and I have to learn that line. And these are friends actually. But that stuff is actually really important.
Right. I think some of the security of the Knights, or at least security of good friendships, is you can poke at each other, but because you know that friendship is real, you know, it's not like you're walking into a room like, I kind of know these guys and they're making fun of me, so okay, I don't know what to do with this, but you know, these are my best friends, these are guys I see all the time, they're giving me a hard time, big deal, I'm gonna give it right back to them. And so you lower your guards there, but it shapes you and helps you, and like, okay, I don't want to do that again. The guys are still reminding me of that, and that's helpful and necessary. It's part of growing into that you were talking about, Garrett, that self-knowledge, which where did you originally hear self-knowledge to self-acceptance to self-gift?
I don't even really remember that.
I don't know. I think, honestly, it may have been in like a handbook at conception or something like that, but has always just stuck in my mind and heart of that just makes so much sense. Like that's formation, you know?
Right, right.
To be a priest, but ultimately any just human formation is you got to know who you are, then possess that to not be caught up in what everyone else is thinking or anything like that. And then that is all for giving it away.
Right. I'm pretty sure that comes out of JP2's Pastoris Dabis Vobis, which I feel robbed because I've only discovered that in working with seminarians as a priest. Like someone probably said it to us somewhere in seminary, but it went over my head and I never had that piece of the puzzle, but it makes so much sense and it brings so many other things in context. And even in friendship, well, what does friendship do? It does. A good friend mirrors back to us. It does help us to knowledge. And when we realize that we are accepted by this other person, it helps us to accept ourselves, which is so often a dynamic we see in chaplaincy, working with high school kids, college kids that are struggling with their interior. They can't accept themselves and they don't have the people around them that are helping them to accept themselves by accepting them.
Even in those imperfections that I'm going to make fun of you for.
Right, right.
But not so much that I'm like, if you don't change it, I'm not going to be your friend. I'm going to be your friend, but I'm going to give you a hard time about that. So then I'm not perfectionist because I know I have these faults and so do you, but we're both accepted and that gives that self-possession that you need.
I had a seminarian tell me the other day, and I've told you guys this story. He just said, why does everyone like me so much? And it was that exact thing in that everyone seems to see things in me that maybe I haven't seen in myself. And that is so vital because you're exactly right. I usually don't see those things in my and they can be such a wonderful mirror and it can be toxic too. That absolutely just what we're talking about. And so it can be a thermostat really for you. Your friends are going to be, you're an average of the five people you hang out with the most. I should ask myself when I'm struggling, who am I hanging with?
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm thriving, who am I hanging with? Mm-hmm. And they almost always are connected.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think friends too, then the individual, there's this great line from Gregory Nazianzus, and I would encourage everyone to, if they can look up the Office of Readings for the Feasts of Gregory Nazianzus and Basil. It's my favorite little treatise on friendship.
It's the go-to.
It's magnificent. And what usually happens in friendships, especially with bros, but with all friends, there's rivalry. There's comparison.
A little bit.
A little bit of envy. There's those types of things. And there's this wonderful little line from him that I think is helpful. The same hope inspired us, the pursuit of learning. This is ambitious, especially subject to envy. Yet between us, there was no envy. On the contrary, we made capital out of our rivalry. Our rivalry consisted not in seeking the first place for oneself, but yielding it to the other. For we each looked on the other's success as his own. I love that the rivalry was good. We made capital of the rivalry. I'm not going to be afraid of that. But actually, the rivalry is going to be, can I assist the other in growing? That we make it a competition almost out of virtue and the best. And there's something great about that because it challenges me and draws me up to a higher level. We made capital out of our rivalry. That's a natural thing. There's always, let's not get away with that competition. That's right. An okay thing. But it can lead me to do things I wouldn't have done if it wasn't for these other people.
Absolutely. And I feel like I'm able to live that more now later in life. So some of these guys that I was friends with in high school and college through the Knights of the Holy Queen, in part because we are united in our faith, you know, we're still close friends today. And there is a lot of, you know, rejoicing when another guy has some accomplishments. And when he grieves, we all grieve and we're there together. And when he does well, we all do well. You know, I don't know what just made me think of this. One of the poignant times for me in the Knights of the Holy Queen, because we're a Marian group, it was always kind of a custom when we go to something fancy, mass or something, we'd wear blue. Mm-hmm. So you wear a blue shirt,
wear
blue
blues.
Tie. Yeah, you wear your blues. And so my dad was killed in a car accident when I was 19. And so at the funeral, just seeing all of the brothers in their blues, and I wasn't expecting it. You know, you don't expect anything at that point, but just to see pews of these young men in shirt and tie and blue that were there to support me and to be there with me. And just, that is actually one of the most concrete memories I have of those days.
Wow.
are the brothers coming in to be there at mass and to pray for me and to check in on me. And it was hugely important to be accepted, to be in loved in that, so I could accept and love myself in the midst of all of that. I think, I may be sticking my foot in my mouth on this one, but you were talking about kind of that challenging each other, giving each other a hard time. I feel like that tends to be more on the male side of friendship than on the female. I didn't have sisters, so I don't really know how that works. I'm nicer to my friends who are girls than I tend to be to my friends that are guys.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I remember it was kind of an embarrassing moment. I was visiting you up, Drew, up at K-State.
Okay.
And there was a student in there who was really good with it, and you and me and Father Gale started giving her a hard time like we would with anyone. And she took it a little bit more to heart than the rest of us.
I remember that. I think
and we all felt like terrible people at the end of it.
I apologize profusely after that.
But we were just doing what we would do with one another out of the best intentions.
You've got to kind of learn. And it also depends on, and with men and women, what kind of day they've had.
Right, that's true.
You got to feel all those things out. But you're right. And perhaps there's a masculine element to that makes sense. And I don't know enough about why that would be, but I do remember that. That was very embarrassing. not one of our best moments.
Not the best moment, not a shining moment. And I think that's a key piece too. Sometimes in guys in discerning, because of how God has made the human person, you know, we're going to discern best when we're healthiest. So we want these human things in place to make us healthy. Friendships are a necessity of humanity to be healthy. And I think to be a normal, healthy human, we need friendships that are both male and female. If you look around and all of your friends are only guys, there's something, there's a piece that's mm-hmm. missing there. And if you look around and only your friends are only women, there's mm-hmm. a piece missing. We really do need both, because like as we were talking about that self-knowledge and self-acceptance, the genius of woman sees something in a person differently than the genius of man, or they respond to something different. And if we're going to be shaped as a whole person, we need both of those identities here. So like the Knights of the Holy Queen was a brotherhood and was crucial and hugely important for me, but there were also friends that were women out there that were also helping shape me in a different way. We need both.
I had a young woman who's married talk to me and ask questions about her kind of role in challenging her husband and calling out her husband, things like that. And I shared with her, I loved getting called out by the women in my life. It hits different when the women in your life challenge you and call you out. And we've had some women like that. No one's called, she's not listening to this podcast 1,000%. Tara Elpers, now Tara Munoz. No one has called me out more over the years.
I can see Tara doing
than
that.
Than her. She'll tell it like it is.
Yeah.
And Carly Brown, same way in our lives, and their significant others are good friends of ours. And that's a cool lifelong friendship that will be part of our lives. But they see things in a different way. They experience mm-hmm. things different. You are able to share maybe a different aspect of your life and heart there, and always with appropriate boundaries and guidelines and things like that. Of course, that goes without saying. But the feminine friendships, they'll talk about this in seminary all the time. Men, you've got to know how to work with women. You've got to know how women work. And if you don't, you ain't going to make it as a priest. You aren't going to make it as a priest. And so learning that on a practical level and on the way my heart has been formed by women over the years has been so vital.
Yeah, I look back on at that time in high school, again, coming to know who I was. And one of the things I'm greatest for about the fact that I was dating for almost all of high school is that I could develop friendships with women that was obviously not romantic. Because especially in those teenage and young years, it's like, it's really hard to just develop a friendship with a woman, because there's always this back of like, okay, is this flirting? Is this going somewhere else? And so we had friends in high school and they could call me out and just develop that maybe softer side, more emotional side that men usually are just kind of stunted a little bit in that area.
Yeah, very true.
Late bloomers.
Yeah, yeah. And then through seminary, maintaining those friendships with women from high school and college and people I'd met through Totus Tuus and different things. And one thing I always remember, especially through seminary and then into priesthood, I think it's a line from or something Sister Maria Jacinta in IHM who taught us in high school said that you need female friendships that care as much or more about your vocation than you do.
Interesting.
And that has been my experience in women like her or just good friends, that they have such a love for the priesthood that again takes away that fear of like, okay, I'm still discerning. I'm in the seminary. Am I crossing the line? Are we hanging out too much? If somehow you can get that across, that sense from her that she cares more about your vocation than you do, then she's going to lead you where you need to go and follow God's will.
I once asked Father Pat, if I was hanging out with a girl too much. And he said, if you're asking me that question, the answer is yes. It was good advice. It was the advice I needed to hear.
I'd never thought of it, though, of them, yeah, caring for your vocation as much as you. That's a neat idea. I had a good friend, female friend, while I was in seminary. And one of the ways, I hadn't looked at it through that lens, but that she cared for my vocation is, you know, she ended up getting married while I was still in seminary. And we were very close. We'd talk and, you know, some of the struggles, like any seminarians, you know, I'm not going to have a wife or I'm not going to have kids. And she could see better than I did that, okay, you can make kind of a romantic idol out of that that's beyond reality. And so she would take pictures of her children having fits and just mail them to me. No letter, no nothing. I would just open up an envelope and there'd be a picture of a screaming child or something like that. And that was one of her ways of caring for my own vocation. Yeah. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
I talk about that in celibacy class with the guys, just that those reality checks. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, the piece to take home is that have good people around you, good friends. Be a good friend if you want good friends and have good friends around you. And that will aid you in your knowledge, in your acceptance, and ultimately in your discernment so that you can give yourself, whether that's in priesthood or married life or wherever the Lord may be leading you.
And I think what's really helpful for men is to see how good of friends we are. And that's even if that's the only thing that comes from this kind of podcast, that the three of us are really good friends, that the priesthood is a family. It's a family. It's a brotherhood.
Absolutely.
And the more often guys can see these types of friendships that I so desire and need, that's what the priesthood really is all about in some way. Some brothers going to battle together. And so you will have those friendships, those deep, intimate, powerful friendships. And the more often we can show that to other people, I think the more helpful we're going to be in discernment.
Absolutely, yeah. You think of some guys in dioceses where there's not many priests, and gosh, that's rough. We are blessed here because that brotherhood is here and that friendship carries us along in wonderful ways. Well, I think we'll wrap up there. Thanks again for listening to About 4 O'Clock. If you have questions you'd like us to address, you can email us at wichitavocations@gmail.com. You can also visit us at our website, about4.org. I will say, since we started this podcast, I've never been quite satisfied how we end it. And I've been like, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way. Well, the other day I was in my holy hour and I was reflecting on some things. Longtime listener of the show, Terry of Avila. Some people know her as Teresa of Avila, saint. Reflecting on some of the things she said. And there was a quote and I'm like, that's so good. Well, I should share that on the podcast. And then just kind of hit me. That's how we should end the podcast, is just the final thought being a quote from a different saint each week. So we're going to try that, see how that works. But our final thought today comes from St. Teresa of Avila. She writes, "We are his. May he do with us as he will and lead us along whatever way he pleases." See you next week.